It's Monday, April 9th, 2018. Welcome to Comic Talk Today. And boy, is there stuff to talk about. Now this past weekend was C2E2 in Chicago, and I'm not going to talk about the news on that today. Today I'm going to do a little rant. Tomorrow I'll be doing a little bit of C2E2 follow-up news. Wednesday we'll do the comic predictor, and I'll go ahead and finish off top of the pile from last week. I haven't finished reading all my books for the week, so I'll wait for Wednesday. Thursday, Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler will be on. And Friday, most likely, I'll be doing a discussion on comic book sales. We'll see if that happens. What I wanted to talk about today, though, was the importance of being earnest. No, I'm not talking about a book. I'm talking about comic book industry. Because it is important to be earnest. By earnest, I mean sincere and honest and open. And I want to preface by saying that I don't think any company that's publishing books out today owes anything to anyone. So I want to make that clear before I go on with my spiel, because I don't want anyone that listens to this podcast to think that I feel like any comic company owes me anything. And I hope that you don't feel like any company owes you anything. Because I think we're at a point now, especially with the importance of social media, where people feel like they can say anything they want, whenever they want, however they want. They can feel like they can tell creators and publishers and editors, artists and writers and whoever else, what a particular book is doing wrong, what a particular book is doing right. And I think there's a lot of that in society nowadays. And this is not at all meant to be some kind of socio-political discussion. You want to read it that way, that's up to you. But what I want to talk about is the importance of being earnest with retailers and with fans in particular. Those of you that have been following me on other podcasts are very well aware that I've been a huge Valiant fan for decades. I picked up my first Valiant issue in 1993. It was Exo Manowar number 0. It was an awesome chromium variant cover. I still have that original copy that I purchased. It's a beautiful cover. I believe it's Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti did the cover. Amazing cover. Terrific issue also. And it was announced this past week that Warren Simons, editor-in-chief at Valiant, was stepping down from the company. Now, this is not really news to me. Maybe for people that don't follow the ins and outs of comics, might have been taken a little aback by it if they follow that kind of thing. But Warren's been in the industry for decades as well. He used to be an editor over at Marvel. Fantastic guy. I got the chance to speak with him several times on the now defunct Valiant Central podcast. Totally cool guy. Really knowledgeable about comics. Really knew what people wanted, what directions to take a comic to make him interesting. And he's no longer at Valiant. And to me, this was expected. Because a few weeks ago, Valiant had announced that Carl Bowlers was going to be taking over editorial duties for the entire line of books, pretty much. And so, if you can read the tea leaves, as they say, you could probably have guessed that Warren was stepping down. Now, the reason I wanted to kick off the discussion with Valiant is because I feel, out of all the publishers out there, Valiant has done an extremely good job since 2012, when Dinesh relaunched the company, in communicating with fans on a personal level. If you went to a convention and you went to their booth, chances are he was there. And he was the CEO of the company. Chances are you'd have a top sales guy there. Maybe Hunter, who used to be the marketing guy there, would be at the booth. They were all shilling out books. They would walk around, talk to people, try to get them to pick up a free copy if they liked it. Bring them over to the booth. Talk about all the other books that they had. Really, really, really good customer outreach from Valiant over the years. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I attended a convention, a local convention, and Valiant is always one of the main booths at the convention, right near the front door. And they always had a great sales team there, talking to everyone, walking around the convention. Of course, this year was a little bit different because, as people who follow comic news are aware, Dinesh is no longer with the company, Hunter is no longer with the company, Josh Johns is no longer with the company, And now Warren is no longer with the company. And I understand that that weekend was also the weekend of, I believe, WonderCon. It might have been Emerald City Comic Con. I can't remember. But there was another big con. And so, of course, I didn't expect there to be a huge turnout from people there. Now, there were a couple creators there, like Louis LaRosa and Brian Reaver were there. But the booth felt different. There were a couple of salespeople there who weren't as engaged with the public. And I kind of briefly talked about that in the episode where I shared my con experience a couple of weeks ago. And it really made a difference because, to be honest, I didn't even feel like stopping at the booth. Now, this past weekend was C2E2, and unfortunately, I had to cancel my plans to go at the last minute. It kind of wasn't looking good over the last few days, and just the way that work's been going, there was no way. But fortunately, a large group of podcasters from the network that this podcast is on, the Nerd Legion Network. Go check it out, nerdlegion.com, tons of podcasts. A lot of the guys were there at C2E2, and they kind of had the same feeling at the booth at this giant convention. I mean, I don't know how many attendees C2E2 has, but I would assume 70, 80, 100,000 people easily, I would say. One of the top cons in the country. And even through that, they did have the marketing guy there. The editor was there. VP of sales were there. There were a ton of people there. Lots of creators as well. I know they brought Steven Segovia out there. He's working on the new Shadow Man title. And the feeling at the booth was a little different. Traffic was much lower from my understanding. The engagement was there, but it felt a little off. Now, I know there were two panels. There was a Harbinger Wars 2 panel, and there was also a Spotlight on Shadow Man panel. And Ronnie from the Absolute DC podcast, also my podcasting partner on the Aftershock Central podcast, was there. He was kind enough to record it. So shout out to him and Dewan from Collecting Valiant for doing that for me. And I got to listen to the panel. Matter of fact, I posted it on the Valiant Central podcast feed. So if you subscribe to the Master Network feed, you can listen to that. It was pretty interesting. If you don't, go check out the Valiant Central podcast, which is no longer around, but I put the panel out on that feed as well. And right off the bat, to me, it felt different. I understand that it was Mel and Carl's first convention with Valiant, first big convention on their own at with Valiant. But I didn't get the sense of excitement and just that special connection when they were talking about the books and the characters that they're publishing. Now, I don't know these guys, so I'm not going to say that they're not passionate about things. And if you listen to this, I hope that nobody reads between the lines and thinks in any way, shape, or form that I feel like they don't share the same passion as the crew that we, as Valiant fans, had come to know and love. But it felt different. And if you go listen to that panel, you'll get the hint of that pretty quickly, I would say. Now, Adam Freeman, who's now VP of Sales, was on the panel. And Adam is always, I guess the easiest way to put it would be somewhat flamboyant. He's a very nice dude, but, you know, he does rub some people the wrong way, I would say. And I think he did a great job on the panel. And the excitement that he has, I think, is pretty obvious. But I just didn't feel like that from the rest of the crew. Now, of course, this goes back to my point at the beginning that nobody should ever feel like any comic company owes them anything. Because that's really important. These people are out doing a job. They're not out there to please fans. They're out there to make money for the company that they work for. But it seems to me like it would make much more sense to have people who want to generate excitement, who want to make you feel connected to the books that you're reading. And this is not always the case, and it hasn't really ever been the case, I would say. But somehow it feels like as social media changes the way that these publishers put out news and talk about books in public, that we are seeing a much bigger connection from these other publishers to try to generate some outreach, try to generate excitement or the new books that they're putting out. Now, this has always been the case, I would say, for indie creators, for the most part. Again, go back to my con experience, where I had some not-so-pleasant ones with very small indie creators. But I would say out of the companies that are out there now, I feel like they do a really good job at connecting with people, taking the time out to answer questions on social, via email, on podcasts, whatever it might be. And some guys do a better job than others, of course. Now I'm a big Aftershock fan, and I think that the Aftershock crew does a really good job at engaging. And engagement is really important for a company the size of Aftershock or any other smaller ones. Scout, Vault, Lionforge, Titan, Boom, IDW even. You know, people like Joe Pruitt have been in the industry for many a decade, are very well aware of that, and they do a good job at connecting with people, answering any questions that might be needed. But what I find really interesting is that it seems like over the last, I would say, maybe year and a half or two, we're starting to see that same level of excitement come on over to big publishers. For example, DC, I think, has done an amazing job since Rebirth with Dan DiDio and Jim Lee going to all these conventions, talking to people, hosting panels, and really, really showing how excited they are to be making comics. Because these guys used to be creators, and now they're pretty much top dogs, right? They're in charge of putting together these lines, setting up the direction of the books for months and years to come. And they want people to feel the same excitement that they feel creating these books. Not everybody can do that, right? And so I look at Marvel, for example. I think Marvel right now is in a really interesting position. So in the last couple of years, things at Marvel have been a little rocky, I would say. Axel Alonso used to be editor-in-chief there. He was either let go or stepped down fairly recently. And Marvel put C.B. Cebulski on as editor-in-chief. And I know when that was announced, there were a lot of people that were upset. I would say understandably, because of the whole fact that he used to write under a pen name, had this whole made-up story about his Japanese heritage, and that rubbed people the wrong way, because he is very obviously not of Japanese descent, nor did he But C2E2 seems to have changed that for a lot of people, including myself. So the recent announcements that have been kind of popping out from Marvel have gotten me pretty excited. And I don't know when that whole thing turned around for me, because I have been reading Marvel books, just not as many as I used to back in the day. But as I see some of this new talent coming in that I really enjoy, for example, Zach and Lonnie, or Donnie Cates, Rosenberg over at Marvel, those guys are doing really interesting things and giving these books kind of an indie feel, but with big two characters. And that's exciting to me. And those guys are very engaging. Matter of fact, setting up the interview with Zach and Lonnie for this week's Therapy Thursday, Zach was the one that reached out to me. And those guys are extremely engaged with people that are willing to support their work and willing to put them on a podcast or do an interview for a news site or whatever it might be. Because, sure, they do a book at Marvel, but they also have creator-owned work. Come Into Me at Black Mask, Her Infernal Descent from Aftershock. And it is in those guys' best interest to reach out to people and generate excitement for their books. Because the comics industry is in a tough place, especially with single issues, right? The trades seem to be doing well for most of the indies. Maybe not as well for the big two, but they still sell great. And that's the reasoning for the move towards a longer format so that those books can be put into trades. Why they do a lot of what we used to call Elseworlds titles, because those will do well in trades. And I got some information about the retailer summit that happened, I believe it was Thursday, so before C2E2 opened up for the public on Friday. Diamond does their annual retailer summit at C2E2. And of course, you know, there's a DC panel for retailers. There's a Marvel one. Image does one. Boom, IDW. You know, everybody presents kind of to give retailers an idea of where the publisher has been in the last year, what their current plans are, where they're going moving forward, and how they're able to help the retailers sell their books. Because, you know, retailers just want to sell books, right? So if you go to a shop and they don't have, let's just say, Vault Comics available there, it's possible they don't have them because they're not aware of them, number one. It's also possible they don't have them because people aren't asking for them. And of course, if those creators, if the editorial staff, if the CEO, we'll just say, isn't reaching out to existing comic fans to try to get them to understand why they should be picking up these books, why it's worth their $3.99 or $4.99 or whatever it might be, then those books will never sell. And so these panels for the retailers are very important so the retailers can understand how it is that these publishers are willing to help these creators or these businesses. I heard an interesting story, for example, from Boom. Now, I'm not very familiar with Boom. I don't purchase a lot of Boom. Matter of fact, I very rarely purchase Boom books. And I'm not sure why that is. There are Boom books that I do pick up every so often. But Boom is very much about trying to get their books in stores. And the way that they do it is really interesting because they offer retailers full refundability on every number one and every number two that they put out. And that is really, really important because by offering full refundability for the first two issues, you are giving the retailer the option of purchasing as many as they want. They can buy 1,000 copies of your book. And sure, that's going to inflate sales numbers for one and two, and you might get some kind of bump because you're on the sales charts as a big number and whatever. But I don't think Boom books are generally that high up on the charts anyway. Partially maybe because some retailers don't know that they offer full refundability on these books. But it's important because Boom wants to have their line in every store. And of course, what better incentive than to say, these books are pretty much free to you guys. Why do you not take advantage of this? Now, I understand if a shop goes and orders 1,000 copies of a Boom book and they sell like one. That might be a tough investment for those people. But let's just use more realistic numbers. Why not order 10 copies, 20 copies, 50 copies of a book? You will have fans at your shop. More than likely, if you're a shop of a more decent size, we'll say, maybe in a somewhat larger city, you will always have people that want to try new stuff. And you will always have people that follow certain publishers or creators or whatever that are looking for these books. So sure, the retailer will have to do the initial investment, because remember, retailers are paying for these books in advance. You will have to put up the initial investment. But if all those books are returnable, then who cares? Because really, you're not losing any money, and you're making sure that those books are available to your fans, to your customers. And ultimately, that's what you want, right? Like, the shops have to pay rent, and the only way to do that is to sell comics. Well, I mean, there's other ways, right? Shops sell board games and Funko Pops and whatever other crap is out there. But it's a comic shop, ultimately. And so the core of the business is still comics, even if there are other residual forms of revenue that the publisher or the retailer can have. So of course, if they're fully refundable, go ahead and get them. And by that point, if you never had, let's say, Boom, and you build some kind of audience, you might be able to order issues 3 and 4 so that those people that decide to subscribe to these books have those books available. Now, by that point, they won't be returnable, but then you'll have a pretty good idea of what you are and aren't selling when you're willing to take a chance on something that's new. And I'm not sure what the returnability or what the other incentives are from other creator or other publishers. I know that like Aftershock has done similar things. Image does it sometimes, but the way that Image books are structured, because Image is kind of a distributor of sorts, it tends to be a little more different. And of course, you have Marvel and DC. I mean, that's the core of the business, right? You're going to have the majority of your customers going out and getting a Marvel or DC book. But going back to the Marvel argument, over the years, I think retailers have felt a little, and we'll just say bummed out by the state of Marvel. And, you know, the reasoning for that could be multitude, who knows? Usually you want to find a scapegoat, and it seems to me at least that the scapegoat for a large chunk of this, not entirely, was Axel Alonso as editor-in-chief. And that's why he's gone, and C.B. Cebulski came in. And what I found really interesting is Axel was a very personable guy. Matter of fact, I think he had a column on one of the major comic news sites, either weekly or every 2 weeks or monthly, I can't remember, where he kind of talked about the state of Marvel. They just shot him a couple questions, and he answered in long form. But C.B. Cebulski was at C2E2 this past week, and I thought it was really interesting the way that everyone reacted to him. Because from my understanding, at the retailer summit, everyone that listened to his speech, which was, I don't know, about 40, 45 minutes, I believe, on what Marvel is offering, and it wasn't anything new, there was nothing new that retailers didn't already know was coming, but the way that he explained it, I think the retailers had a really good feel that this guy is kind of one of them. And that's part of the point that C.B. Cebulski was trying to convey to the retailers. Because, you know, he talked about how he used to work in a shop or multiple shops and kind of how he transitioned from that into comics. And it was a fairly interesting story. But it made him very personable. And I think he made it a point to allow the retailers to understand that Marvel really wants to help the retailers grow. And whatever mistakes they had made in the past, they're willing to fix, but they need those retailers to follow them along for the ride. And that's almost in some ways the same thing that happened when DC went from the New 52 to Rebirth. Because Dan DiDio in particular, I think, was amazing in getting people to understand why this was different and why people should allow them to give the books a chance. First and foremost, from the retailer standpoint, because they're the ones making these books available, but then of course to the fans. And ever since then, at every big convention, you always see DiDio and Jim Lee hosting whatever the big panel is, either one or two panels usually on the big cons. And that's important. And these guys engage all the time on social media. And I see that same thing with C.B. Cebulski. And it's fascinating because I don't remember ever seeing that from Marvel, at least not in the past several years, and definitely not within the last year or two as social has become more important for these publishers to try to get the word out on their products. And I know that C.B. Cebulski also did a get-to-know C.B. panel with Scotty Young as moderator because they'd known each other for like 20-plus years. And I know there was kind of mixed reaction on that, but I think the point of that was kind of the same thing that CB did at the retailer summit, but try to give the fans kind of a, listen, I love comics. I'm one of you guys kind of spiel. And that's interesting that the new Marvel editor-in-chief is that type of person. Now, I didn't get to listen to the panels, and of course I didn't attend the retailer summit because I'm not a retailer. But from everything that I've read and all the discussion that I've heard about, it does seem like he made a really good impression. And the very few things that I've seen of this guy has me really excited for the future of Marvel. Because this guy really is a comic book guy that just wants to make great comics. And that's what's important, right? So my main beef with the whole Valiant getting sold to this Chinese company was the way that a lot of the announcement was phrased, in particular by people that work for that company. Because it seemed pretty obvious that the focus is no longer on the comics. The focus is on making movies out of these comic books. And that's fine, right? Because they're going to make money, maybe, on making these movies from comics. Marvel's at a point where they just pretty much print money left and right. Every single movie does millions and millions of dollars. I just saw either yesterday or this morning that Black Panther is now like the top three highest grossing movie of all time, but surpassed Titanic. And that's just pure insanity. And I'm super happy that that kind of movie has gathered so much attention worldwide. Because of course those numbers aren't just US, right? So it's really, really amazing. And of course, Marvel's not hurting for money. Again, they're printing money from these movies. it's probably the comic side that's not making them less money, if any. I'm not sure what the economics of those different divisions are within Disney. But it's fascinating because this guy just wants to make good comics. And as comic fans, that's what we want to hear from every single person. And anybody can say it. I can tell you I'm going to go put out a Comic Talk Today comic. And it's going to be awesome. You're going to love it. You should pick it up because I'm writing it. Now, were you excited for this comic because I said that? Of course not. But CB and people like Dinesh, Dan Didio, Jim Lee, Peter Cimetti over Alterna is really, really good at that. These people are willing to take time out of their schedule to promote their stuff and show the fans that, listen, it's just, we're people too. We're just, this is a job that we're doing, but we want to do it the best way that we can because we're really excited about the material that we're putting out. And you can always feel when a writer is put into a book and they're just kind of getting a paycheck. And I'm not going to name names because I don't want to call anybody out. But I have felt that many a time over the years. And those books might be okay, and many of them sell extremely well because of the names behind them. But does that really excite you? That like, hey, yeah, if they do another one, oh my God, hell yeah, I'm going to pick this up. I mean, probably not, right? Like, you may not regret your decision to read that particular book, but you might be like, okay, if they do this again, maybe I'll just trade weight, or I'll wait to see what this podcast says, or I'll let my friends read it, and, you know, if they like it, maybe I'll go get it. You can always tell when somebody is doing something because they want to, or because they kind of have to. And listen, these people got to make money. Everybody's got to make money, and not everybody has the opportunity to choose what projects they want to work on. A lot of creators seem to be getting very lucky with finding the work that they want, but maybe they have to start somewhere else that they maybe don't feel as passionate about. And I'll give an example. You know, Tinian over on Detective. I love Detective, so I'm not saying anything bad about Detective. But now he's getting to write this Justice League Dark book that's what he always wanted to write at DC. The stuff that he was doing in Detective was kind of him testing the waters on some things for this book that he really, really wanted to do. And because he did so well in Detective, now he's able to put his passion into this Justice League Dark book. And that has me excited because when somebody is able to do their passion project, you can tell. It just flows out of the page. You get that feeling, right? You don't need to be near this person. You can see it in the words that you're reading. You can look at the art, the way the panels are laid out. You can tell when somebody's really passionate about things. And that's a lot harder in a comic than it is going to a convention and seeing a panel or listening to somebody in a podcast or in a YouTube video or whatever it is. You can always tell the passion. And people are drawn to that kind of passion. And to have big two companies in comics finally starting to show that level of passion, that love for the art that they're creating, is really amazing. Because comics are in a tough place. You have to find new and inventive ways to push those books out, to get new readers to come in, to get your existing readers to expand their base so they can, instead of picking up 3 books, they pick up 5 or 7 or 10, or be crazy like me and just buy way too many books. But you've got to have that passion. And if you don't have that passion, then maybe you shouldn't be working for this company. Maybe you should go work for a different company. Maybe you can't. And like I said, I understand these people are just trying to do their job. But I've worked in many a job where I dreaded waking up in the morning for the simple fact that I knew that I had to be at work for 8, 10, 12, 14 hours. And my job situation now is a little odd. I do like my job, but the amount of hours that I'm putting in has me liking the job less and less. And so at what point does a job go from a hobby to a job to something you really love, or the other way? And so I found all the CBC Boston stuff really fascinating. I'm really, really stoked for what Marvel has coming up. I'll probably talk about some of that stuff on tomorrow's episode. But let me know what you think. Can you tell when a creator actually wants to be doing something? or whether they're just doing it just because it's a job? Do you feel like there's some companies that do better at it than other ones? Which ones? Let me know. You can find me, of course, on Twitter, at Geekvine. ComicTalkToday@gmail.com is the email address. And, of course, you can find this podcast everywhere. We're on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, Google Play Music, I think on TuneIn. I just got the email, we're now on iHeartRadio somehow. I don't know how that happened. But thanks to iHeartRadio for doing that. I'll be back tomorrow with a new episode. Have a good night.